Vishnu Sahasranam. 741. What name is it going to be? Are you waiting? Well, you will have already seen the title as given. It's Madhava, a very well-known name. We have many in Vishnu Sahasranam. We have many not so well-known names, which may not even seem like names at all, like Yat, Tat. They may not seem like names, but Madhava is a very well-known and very much loved name of the Supreme Lord. It comes in throughout the Vaishnava literature. In Bhagavad Gita, early in Bhagavad Gita, we find a description. Tatashvetair hayayukte mahati syandane stito madhava pandavaschaiva divyo shanko pradatmatuhu. With the white horses joined to the chariot, Madhava, with Pandava. In this context, it's understood to be Arjuna because it's already described as Arjuna. So Krishna and Arjuna, Madhava and Arjuna on the chariot to which were yoked the white horses, they started blowing their Divya Shankar, their respective conches, which were described as being celestial or of superlative quality. The main meaning which is given especially by the Sri Vaishnava commentators, the out of the many possible meanings, they emphasize very much the meaning, the consort of Lakshmi, the husband of Lakshmi. This name has already occurred twice in Vishnu Sahasranam, in the 1st century and the 2nd century, now in the 8th century. I'll flash back to some of the commentary on the given in the 1st century by the original Sri Vaishnava commentator, Parashara Bhatta, who, stating that Ma means Lakshmi, Mayadhava Madhavaha. Ma in Bengali, it's maybe the most important word in the Bengali language for most Bengalis. The mother, which refers to their own, particularly to their own physical mother, and to Ma Kali, and Ma Kali, and Ma Tara, and Ma Sarasvati, but especially Ma Kali, Ma Durga. And we find that in Parashara Bhatta's exposition also. He describes so much the qualities of Lakshmi, Pirakti, they say in the Tamil version. He gives so much, and then at the end he says, and Madhava means the husband of such a person. So he goes to show how great. He's great because she's great. Because of his connection with her, therefore we give importance to him. And of course there's no question of Lakshmi without Narayan, although there is Lakshmi Puja celebrated in the Kartik months, in the Puja season. There are many people who they worship Lakshmi without reference to Narayana. There are different forms of Lakshmi, Dhana Lakshmi, Dhanya Lakshmi, Gaja Lakshmi. There are so many forms of Lakshmi. and they want to worship her for wealth and prosperity and power and so many things. But that's a misconception, that to worship Lakshmi without recognizing her relationship with Narayana, it's something like what Ravana wanted to do with Sita, but she didn't agree. So if we want to worship Lakshmi without Narayana, then it's like Ravana. He was praising her and wanting to enjoy her company, but she wouldn't accept it. He can say so many things in praise of her, but she won't accept. Then what do you end up with? And then you get the chayeva, the shadow, the shadow potency, which is the external potency of the Lord. When we want to separate Lakshmi from Narayana, that means we want to enjoy. Then she becomes Chanchala, another name of Lakshmi, because in this world, Lakshmi, wealth, she doesn't stay very long in one place. Just like there are so many individuals. You may say, well, someone may be born wealthy and remain wealthy all their life. Yeah, but their life is short. In the next life, there's no guarantee they'll be wealthy. Or some nation or empire is very wealthy and powerful. And then, just like lightning hits in one place, then another place, it doesn't. It's just a flash, then it's gone. So, in the same way, some empire, they may be very powerful, and they think, now we're on top, we're so powerful, no one can challenge us. America is now going through the inevitable death throes of a powerful nation. They were the wealthiest in the world, the wealthiest nation in the world, and now they're going down the drain, and China's coming up. And then it'll be another, then another, then another, another, because Chanchala, Lakshmi, doesn't stay long, but she stays always on the chest of Narayana, the Srivatsa mark. She's always there, and she's always at his lotus feet, massaging his lotus feet. So she's always with him. So if we want Lakshmi, then we should want Lakshmi with Narayana, because otherwise we may get her temporarily, that's all. And if we have Lakshmi with Narayana, then we can't try to take the role of the enjoyer of Lakshmi. Then we have to be a humble servant. Parashara Bhatta states about Narayana, that the secret understanding of Narayana is that Vishnu is great because of his association with her. That's the secret about Lakshmi, Shri also. And of course, we Gauriyas will say that the Sarva Lakshmi is Radharani. And we do, and we say it, and we accept it as a fact. And our Sri Vaishnava friends, they won't agree, and we'll disagree. And it's a pleasant disagreement. That they want to see the form of Narayana as supreme, of Sri Lakshmi as supreme. We want to see Krishna as supreme, Radha as supreme. But there's no real argument, because it's a matter of taste, that's all. Narayana and Krishna, non-different. Radha and Lakshmi, non-different. It's a matter of taste. But Radha is supreme. Even if we examine objectively. We can do also. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu discussed with Venkata Bhatta and asked, well, why did Lakshmi perform austerities to join the rasa dance, but she couldn't. Gopi anugata bina aishwarya gane bhaje leho na pai brajendra nandane. This is the conclusion. If you don't want to give up the concept of Krishna being the supreme, then even if you worship him, you can't get Krishna in Vrindavan. This is the conclusion. Anyway, let's not get into that discussion now, because I'm reading with great appreciation of this devotee, Parasha Bhatta, who's obviously far, far more advanced than in his love and his devotion than I can ever hope to be. He is glorified Lakshmi. He states that in the Vedic literature, and he gives some others, he gives some examples, how the glories of Sri Lakshmi are delineated in the Sri Sukta, Shraddha Sukta, Medha Sukta, Uttara Narayana, Koshitaki Brahmana. See, some of them, he's well familiar with all these things, Parasha Bhatta. And I've hardly even heard the name of some of them. So where is he and where am I? He gives several references from the Puranas that speak of the supremacy of Pirati. He quotes from Vishnu Purana. And we'll quote from Bhagavat Purana. Anaya radhate nunam Bhagavan Haririshvara. She who worships him the best. Referring to Radha. Anyway, he quotes from Vishnu Purana. Nityaiva esha Vishnu Shrir Anapayini Yata Sarvagato Vishnu Tataivayam Dvijotama. O best of the Brahmanas, this Lakshmi, esha, is referring here to Lakshmi, is eternal, the universal mother, ever in union with Vishnu, just as Vishnu pervades everything, she does also. Then he quotes from Brahma Purana. I'll just read the English translation. Her power is invincible and awe-inspiring. She is the power of Vishnu himself. Yeah, she's the Shakti. She is the power of Vishnu. She is the power of Vishnu, the Shakti. And we think of Shakti as something, energy, something not personal. And radio waves and X waves and so many light waves and electricity. It's power, it's energy. But this energy comes from Krishna, from Narayana, parasya shakti vividhaiva shuyate, that he has these various kinds of energy or powers. Swabhaviki, jnana, bala, kriya, cha. These energies are classified into three main categories, and there are many subcategories. His knowledge energy, his general strength energy, and his energy for getting things done. So, and these may be subclassified under according to modern classification, just like that, radio waves and radioactivity and the light, different ultraviolet, infrared, and so on and so on and so on. But that is a person. Everything is personal. Nothing is impersonal. Just like Ganga is a person, Yamuna, river. Ganga River is a person. Yamuna River is a person. The earth is a planet. She is a goddess. Everything is personal. The air blows. Vayu is a person. The fire burns is a person. Agni. So she is the Shakti of Lord Narayana. She is the Supreme Being, it states here. In Supreme Being, yes, it's understood. Vishnu Shakti, sir. Supreme, yes, but indistinguishable or inseparable from Narayana. And all the time while I'm saying Lakshmi Narayana, we can substitute Radha Krishna. The thing is that in the case of Lakshmi and Narayana, it's obvious, it's clear, it's pronounced, it's manifest that she and he are supreme. But in the case of Radha and Krishna, that's the beauty of it all. That even though they are supreme, they don't manifest their supremacy because they're more interested in love, the love of each other. So she is the Supreme Being who lives in the lotus-like hearts of all beings of the universe, and she is endowed with diverse forms. Nana Rupa Dharapara. Her name is Pran, Prana Kya. In the Madhva Sampradaya, they very much emphasize how Pran, Vayu, is the Jivotama, the topmost Jiva, taking from the several, especially in the Upanishads, as so many times is the importance of Pran is mentioned. But she is Pranakya, she is known as Pran. So not to undermine the role of Vayu, Mukhya Pran, this the original or the chief Pran, the chief of the in the category of life, but ultimately it all comes from he and from her. She is the mother of all mantras, Mantra Mata, and is the eternal mother of the universe. So we have so many names that Jagat Janani, for instance, the mother of the universe, Jagan Mata, the mother of the universe. And going on quoting from this same, as Lakshmi is his supreme power, she is especially known here, that his supreme power means Parashakti. This term is often applied to Durga Parashakti, but which is not untrue, but particularly should be applied to Lakshmi. And Tasya Karuna Shraya, she is the abode or the quality of compassion, which is also personified, but that particularly gravitates toward her, shelters in her. It's sheltered by her, or she is the natural repository of mercy. She is the supreme Prakriti and possesses the six qualities as Narayana does. Aishvaryasya, Samagrasya, Viryasya, Yashasya, Gyana, Vairagya, Yoscha. She has all these qualities. Opulence, she is opulence. That's another of her names. Aishvarya. Aishvaryasya, Samagrasya. Heroism, fame, beauty, knowledge, renunciation. She has all these qualities. And she is his second form. In other words, she is he, but in a female form. She's supreme, unique, the eternal Shakti of Bhagavan. She transforms herself into forms diverse, high and low, innumerable names, and is the head of the Shakti Chakra. Shakti Chakrasya Nayika. She's the leader of the wheel of powers. She stands steadily pervading the entire universe, everything, meaning and non-meaning. In the Lakshmi Sahasranama, We have the Vishnu Sahasranama, there's Lakshmi Sahasranama. Here's a partial description of her from therein. Mahavibhute Sampurna Shadgunya Vapusha Prabho Bhagavadvasudevasya Nityaiva Esha Anapayini Ekaiva Vartate Bhinna Jyotsneva Himadhidhite Sarva Shaktyatmika Chaiva Vishvam Vyapya Vyatishtita Sarvaishvarya Guno Peta Nityam Tadharma Dharmini Prana Shakti Parahyesha Sarvesham Praninam Bhuvi Shaktinam Chaiva Sarvasam Yoni Bhuta Parakala. She is eternal and inseparably associated with Bhagavan Vasudev, who is the master of great glory, who is endowed with the six qualities and who is all powerful. She is like the moon rays of the moonlight of the moon of cooling rays. She is one with him, yet different also. She pervades the universe, is the very embodiment of all the Shaktis. She has all glory and qualities eternally. Her very dharma, her very nature is the same as that of Bhagavan. Different also. She's the feminine counterpart of Bhagavan. She is the life-giving Shakti of all beings on earth. She is the source of all Shaktis and is the sublime element in all. And all the Shaktis that have emanated from Lakshmi, they pervade the entire universe. So that, see, the scientists presume that the energies we perceive here all over the universe, that is confirmed by Shastra, but those energies, they all come from Lakshmi. They're under the command of her, who is the cause and the source of them. So when she's pleased with someone, then the energies which work within the world, they also become pleased. And it's just if she's pleased with someone, and then everything goes very nicely for him. And you can get prosperity if you want. Lakshmi means prosperity. If you want that. And then after so many things, and Parashar Bhatta says, and therefore he's called Madhava. So it's a whole description of Ma, Mother, Lakshmi, and then at the end, and therefore he's called Madhava. In one sense, Madhava could be considered something like a title, the husband of so-and-so. it's a descriptive name, but it's very dear because he likes that name very much because it states him to be the husband of Lakshmi, and he's very fond of her. So he likes that name, and devotees very much like that name. Also in the Ramayana at the beginning, quite near the beginning. Ramayana, the very name of the Ramayana means it's all about Rama, right? It's the story of Lord Rama. Well, that's true. Yeah, that's why it's called Ramayana. But if you want to know a little bit more, read a little deeply and carefully, and we'll find that Valmiki himself states, Kavyam Ramayanam Kritsnam Sitaya Charitam Mahat. He made this whole narration of the Ramayana. It's the glorious narration about Sita. This is getting very secret and deep here. If we really want to know the glory of Narayana, his glory is he's the husband of the goddess of fortune. So this is all already covered in the first century, name 73. He concludes, Parashar Bhatta, Shadhaya Devo Devat Vamashnute, Lord Vishnu gets his lordship because his association with Lakshmi. This is the secret about the true nature of Sri. So I'm just going over this again, the commentators have, or who has compiled this, who's a Krishnamachari, he compiled all this, he put it again, because it's nice. It was a long time ago, it was several years ago. So let's say it again. Madhava, he's great because of his, Krishna is great because of his association with Radha. Narayana is great because of his association with Lakshmi. Really? She's massaging his feet, isn't she? Yes. But he is such a person to massage his feet? Who's the power of all the universes? And she is massaging his feet. Oh, it shows he's very great. Another meaning that associated with meaning is that by understanding this name, we can understand how, Parashabhata says, that Lakshmi, actually this word Lakshmi in the Sri Sampradaya, they may not use it so much. They prefer to say Sri, or in Tamil, it's Pirati. But anyway, we'll say Lakshmi. It's better known for others. So he says that by this name we can understand how the two of them together always are like our mother and father together. The eternal mother and father of us who are eternally related to them. They're always there. They're always together to protect us. In the modern world, in the Western countries especially, they don't know about this. They don't grow up with father and mother together, and that father and mother have their own separate lives to a large extent. But in civilized society, the father and mother, they are one unit. They work in tandem. Same interests. There's no two interests. People don't understand this, and therefore they have women's rights. They don't understand that the women's rights are included in the men's rights. The men, anyway, I don't get into a big discussion of that. It's always misunderstood how women don't have any. Actually, in Shastra, that allows also women have some property, and they're not treated as slaves. Their provision is made for the possible mistreatment by the husband, but practically speaking, here in India, up to the present day, the vast majority of people marry, and they never think of not being married, and they stay married, and they work it out, and they go on with together, and it's just a normal thing. And therefore, this example given here, how we see them as the mother and father, it makes sense, but it might not make sense to people who are not raised with a mother and father together, or the mother and father, they're just kind of together, but they're not really together in mind and spirit. This whole modern society is so decadent that the examples given in, or the whole concept, which is a fact, it's an eternal fact that Bhagavan, Krishna, and Radha, Lakshmi, Narayan, they're our eternal mother and father, protective relationship. But people can't understand what that means because they grew up with something different. Then another meaning, the bestower or propounder of knowledge about himself. Ma here means vidya, knowledge. Knowledge of himself, knowledge of Hari. And Dhava means the preceptor, the propounder. This is the meaning given in name 169, both the name comes in the second century, by both Shankara Acharya and Bhatta, Sri Bhatta. And again, we'll state it again, they start quote from Harivansha. Ma vidya cha hare prokta tasya isho yato bhavan tasmat madhava namasi dhava swamiti shabditaha. Knowledge about Hari, this is from Harivansha, spoken by Lord Shiva. Knowledge about Hari is called Ma. Lord Shiva addressing the Supreme Lord. You are the master of that knowledge, therefore you're known as Madhava, because Dhava means Lord. Nahi jnanena sadrisham pavitramiha vidyate tat svayam yoga sangseta kalena atmani vindati. Quote from Bhagavad Gita. In this world there is nothing so sublime and pure as transcendental knowledge. Such knowledge is the mature fruit of all mysticism. This is Srila Prabhupada's purport here. His translation, one who has become accomplished in the practice of devotional service enjoys this knowledge within himself in due course of time. So Krishna gives knowledge about himself, and especially in Bhagavad Gita. And within Bhagavad Gita, he gives a lot of importance to knowledge. Ultimately, he gives the importance of bhakti and full surrender to himself, but he gives a lot of importance to knowledge. That the activities of karma, one can do karma, but one should do it in knowledge. And knowledge of Krishna leads to bhakti. Aham sarvasya prabhava matas sarvang pravartite iti matva bhajante bang buddha bhava samanvitaha. Krishna says, I am the source of everything. Everything emanates from me. One who knows this, worships me with all their heart. Bahunam janmanam ante gyanavan mam prapadite vasudeva sarvamiti samahatma sadurlabha. After many births, someone who is actually in knowledge surrenders to me, Krishna says, knowing me to be Vasudev, all-pervading, the son of Vasudev. Such a great soul is very rare. Elsewhere we have Vasudeve, this is from Bhagavatam, Vasudeve Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojitaha Janyatyashu Vairagyam Jnanam Chayada Haitukam. For one who engages in devotional service to Krishna with no personal desire at any level or in any way, automatically knowledge and renunciation follow and come to him. So there's one way of going up through knowledge to come to him. But when one comes to him, when one surrenders to Krishna, one fully comes in love with Krishna, generally by knowing his greatness, this Vishnu Sahasranam, we're discussing the greatness of the Supreme Lord, to instigate, to motivate us to surrender to him more and more and more. And when we surrender to him, as we surrender more and more and more to him, then knowledge of him is automatically revealed within our hearts. And even without acquiring knowledge of him, if one simply loves him, then that is the perfection of all knowledge. One is automatically endowed with all knowledge, but that is rare. That's why Krishna speaks Bhagavad Gita. Knowledge, yeah, it's very important. So many schools and institutions from the beginning of life, the parents start, sorry, not parents, if people have parents, they start to train the children in knowledge. They have to have the children have to learn how to walk, how to talk, how to eat, how to behave. Only as when they've had this initial training can they go to school. The difference between an animal and a human can be said to be advanced intelligence, but that advanced intelligence manifests as acquisition of knowledge. Now we live in the information age and the internet is just full of all kinds of knowledge about all kinds of things. Of course, some of what may pose as knowledge might not be knowledge at all. One thing we should understand when we're talking about knowledge is that within this material world, we are all like frogs. Why like frogs? The example is given: a frog in the bottom of a deep, dark well has no knowledge, or even if someone is born in the bottom of, even if a human is born in the bottom of a deep, dark well, and they can only see the sky above, and they have no way to know anything about the big world outside. The similar example is given in Western philosophy. Plato's cave, people who are born facing away from the light at the entrance of the cave, they can only see according to the reflection of fire. They don't know, they can't know about the big world outside, and if anyone comes to tell them about it, they can't believe it, because it's outside their experience and outside their imagination. So the same thing, Dr. Frog, the big philosopher. But his ability to even conceive of what's beyond his well doesn't exist. And even if someone comes and tells him, another frog jumps down and from outside and says, hey, there's a big world out there, he can't accept it. So, and similarly, the whole endeavor to understand, or to say that we can only understand reality according to what we can observe, the empiric approach, or according to what we can think with our own intelligence to be right, the rational approach, it's all Dr. Frog philosophy. You say, well, you can't prove anything you can't prove there's any God. Yeah, it's just like to the frog in the well. You can't prove that there's something beyond the well. He doesn't have the ability to go beyond, and he doesn't believe what someone coming from the big world outside tells him, because he believes only in his own powers of observation and ratiocination. That's all. He's stuck within the confines, not only of his well, he's not only stuck in the confines of his well physically, but he's stuck within the confines of his own very limited intelligence. Theism means to accept as an axiom that we are very limited in our experience, perception, and intelligence. And that almost certainly, we can take it as certainly, there is reality beyond which we can see, imagine, beyond what we can see, imagine, and think about. See and imagine, two is enough. So although Krishna praises knowledge, and within this world, knowledge is rated highly. Einstein is rated so highly. But is it a blessing or a curse if you know so much, but you don't know what we really need to know? Then knowing so much can be, then we think I know, but we don't actually know. Yeah, the Dr. Frog says, yeah, I know. I'm a great scholar. You say, I know all the little bumps at the bottom of the bottom of the well, and all the little puddles. I know all about it, and I know how to swim around the well. I'm an expert. I'm a polymath. I know all the different languages that the frogs croak. I know music. I can say expert in music, expert singer. Knowledge, well, it can be a curse also. If we put our minds to seeing what's going on in the world, oh, it's horrific. What's going on? You want to look at the news, it's horrific. And therefore we have the entertainment section, the sports section. You want to get at the real section? how people are killing each other. And you want to get to that? Daily, it doesn't make the news. Daily, hundreds of thousands of living beings are mercilessly killed. It's not in the news. It's normal. It's civilization. Slaughterhouses. It's called civilization. You want to know about this? You want to talk about this? Hey, we don't talk about these things. We want to talk about Krishna dancing with the gopis. Yeah, what about all the myth? It's also part of knowledge to know what's going on. It may be better to be ignorant, isn't it? And then you can be peaceful and happy. And is knowledge a blessing or a curse? Krishna gives knowledge. Well, it specifically said knowledge about himself. Ignorance is bliss. And they say, well, the government's exploiting us. The corporations are exploiting us. Well, if you don't know, what do you care? I get enough money. I drink my coffee and I go on with my life. And what do I care? Ignorance is bliss. And then if you find, oh, the government's cheating us. Okay, we have to make a protest and go out and get in the streets and get all upset. Maybe you don't know. If we want to be happy, I'm talking in a, what shall we say, tongue-in-cheek way or roundabout kind of way here. Well, maybe it is. If the goal of life is to be happy, then maybe we don't know about all the bad things and we just shut it out of our mind. So what's the value of knowledge? Well, ignorance is bliss. Well, Krishna, maybe you can say that about himself also, because he is the Supreme Lord, but in Vrindavan, he doesn't want to think about it. He's just in bliss, enjoying, thinking that he's just one of the crowd. He's a cowherd boy. He's never just one of the crowd, even in Vrindavan. He's the cynosure of all eyes. But he knows he's God, and he doesn't know. I plan to discuss this apparently contradictory and actually contradictory from our level of understanding phenomenon in an upcoming talk. Maybe I'll discuss it when we come to the name Sumedha, who has got very good intelligence. This point, how Krishna knows he's God and he doesn't know. But in Vrindavan, he doesn't know. Well, it's not that he's irresponsible or stops being God. That's going on as Narayana. He's overseeing the worlds. He's overseeing. So he's not irresponsible. But he has a time when he relaxes, which is all the time. He enjoys. For so ignorance is bliss. Knowledge can be very distressing. Cheating on your wife, is it better you don't tell her and then she's happy, or you tell her and be honest? What do you do? Ignorance is bliss. Now, real knowledge is the greatest boon. If we know that this world is miserable, that is an impetus to seek that world where there is no misery. Therefore, Krishna speaks about it in Bhagavad Gita, Dukhalayama Shashvatam. This world is miserable. Everything here is temporary. He speaks that. He doesn't say, be happy. Everything in this world is nice. He doesn't say that. That he gives us the actual knowledge of the actual situation. And then when we become highly advanced in Krishna consciousness, then we need not harp on so much about the miseries of this world. We can just be absorbed in the bliss of Krishna's pastimes. Our ignorance is bliss, even for Krishna. But that's a very high level, and even those who are on that high level, they may speak about the lower levels for the benefit of those who are on the low level, which is everyone in this material world, to help to enlighten them. Don't try to enjoy this world. It's not enjoyable. Come to Krishna. Be happy there. Now, another aspect of this name, Madhava, one who gives knowledge about himself, and there's one particular type of knowledge which is called Madhu Vidya. Madhu is linked with the name Madhava. Madhava. Madhu. There's Madhu Vidya, which is described in the Mahabharata as such. Madhu Vidya avabhodatvat davatatvat va shriyo nisham munadhyana cha yoga cha vidhi bharata madhavam. Another meaning of the name Madhava, as given in Mahabharata, is he who is cognized through Madhu Vidya, through silence, resorting to silence and meditation and yoga. One can come to understand this Madhu Vidya. This Madhu Vidya is described in both Chandogya Upanishad and Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. And typical of the genre, the language of the Upanishads, it's almost impossible to understand what is being said, what is meant by what is being said, without the knowledge there being unlocked, without it being explained. If you just take it at face value, it doesn't seem to mean anything. So Madhu Vidya, in the Puranic Encyclopedia, that is mistranslated as the science of intoxicating drinks. No, Madhu can also refer to honey, which can give rise to intoxication. That's not the meaning. It means the honey knowledge. It's the because it's very sweet, it's very relishable, because it is the highest knowledge of the supreme bliss of the self. And it's described there in the Upanishads. It's a kind of knowledge which is to be taught by the father to the son, the guru to the disciple, but only to someone who is qualified to receive it, as is the case with all kinds of spiritual knowledge. It's described in the Rig Veda about Rishi Dadhichi, who's also sometimes called Dadhyancha, who is understood to have had his ashram in Dudeshwa, on the banks of the Sabarmati River near present-day Karnavati, better known as Ahmedabad. So the story given there, and Srila Prabhupada, he summarizes that story of how the Madhu Vidya was imparted by Dadhichi to the Ashwini Kumars. Srila Prabhupada summarizes this in his purport to Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 9, Text 53. And it's given elsewhere somewhat differently. The basic point is that Srila Prabhupada in that purport refers to Brahma Vidya, but specifically Madhu Vidya. Brahma Vidya means spiritual knowledge, and Madhu Vidya is a particular presentation of this spiritual knowledge. So the summary is that Dadhichi, he had knowledge of Pravargya, which means that certain kinds of ritualistic, fruitive activities. And he also had the advanced spiritual knowledge of Madhuvidya. So the Ashvini Kumaras, the two physicians of the demigods, who are Shudras by caste, they approached Adichie and begged him to instruct them in this knowledge. And Adichie said, I'm now doing some fruitive activity, some karma, so you can come back later. Then Indra came, he found out and said to Didichi, you don't give them this knowledge. They're Shudras. He had some grudge against the Ashvini Kumaras. Plus he didn't, this is high knowledge. This is meant for the Brahmanas and Kshatriyas. Don't give it to them, they're Shudras. And he warned Didichi, if you don't do what I say, if you anyway give this knowledge to them, you promise to give it, but I'm telling you, if you give it, I'll cut off your head with my thunderbolt. Well, you're not supposed to give knowledge, Brahma Vidya, to Shudras. Okay, but then you're not supposed to kill Brahmanas either. So then later the Ashvini Kumaras came back and said, okay, can you instruct us? And he said, well, I'm in a fix because I promised to give you this knowledge. But on the other hand, Indra says he's going to cut off my head. So the Ashvini Kumaras came up with a solution. Okay, we will cut off your head now, and we will cut off the head of a horse also, and put the head of the horse on you, because they're the physicians of the demigods, they know how to do all these things. So you speak what you have to speak to us through the head of the horse, then Indra will come, cut off your head, and we'll put your original head back. So that's how the Madhuvidya was imparted to the Ashvini Kumaras. Therefore, this knowledge is also known as Ashvashira. Anyway, that's a narration given in Shastra. What is that Madhuvidya? Again, the way it's stated, it's very esoteric, and the actual inner meaning of it is very difficult to understand unless it's unpacked. But it's the doctrine of how everything is mutually interconnected, because everything is connected to the self. And of course the impersonalists take the self to be an all-pervading oneness. But then if it's an all-pervading oneness, then how can all things be interconnected? Because there aren't all things. Anyway, the example is given in the Madhuvidya, just like a wheel is a composite unit, and the axle is connected with the rim through the spokes. So in this way, just like everything is the rim, we're like the rim, and the axle is the supreme Lord. So in this way, we are all connected. Of course, the Buddhists will come along and say, well, if you take it all to pieces, there's no wheel anymore. So in the same way, if you stop thinking of things as part of each other, then there's nothing left. But that's wrong, because you can disassemble a wheel so that you get axle, rim, and spokes, and the hub and all this. But they still exist. They may be disconnected, but they still exist. Anyway, let's start. Buddhism, give it a big thumbs down here. Nothing, so in this way, the Madhuvidya says that nothing exists that is not connected with the Supreme Soul. it's the existence of the One in relationship with the Many, which the impersonalists take to mean that the existence of the Many doesn't really exist at all because there's only one, but that's not the proper meaning. The sun is the honey of the gods. Then the heaven is the like the bamboo. The intermediate space is like the beehive. The rays of the sun are the offspring of the sun. The sun is the eastern rays are its eastern cells. The mantras within the Rig Veda are the bees. Oh, that reminds me. Oh, I have to make a note of something for next name I speak on. Okay. The Rig Veda itself is the flower, the water, a nectar, and it's all the Rig mantras heated up in the Rig Veda, and then from that out comes the juice of fame, luster, the bodily vigor, strength, palatable food. This juice flowed profusely and settled on the side of the sun, and this gives the red appearance of the sun. And then he talks about the different colors and concludes that the Vedas are all nectar, and you can't understand. It needs unpacking. It's mystic knowledge. Bhagavad Gita, Krishna makes everything very clear. In Chandogya Upanishad, the sun is taken as the main symbol, and the Vidya is described in relation to that. Brihadaranyaka gives a long series of cause and effect. This is the cause of this, and that is the cause of that, and go on and on and on and on. In the Madhva Sampradaya, the name Madhava, very nice meaning, the giver of joy. Madhu iti anand udishta, the giver of joy. Ah, that's the God we want. The giver of joy. Not the God who's so severe, more interested in throwing people into hell. The happy, dancing, joking, laughing Krishna, Madhava, full of joy. Madhava Radha Bhavapur. That's just one description out of thousands by the Vaishnava poets. Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes Madhava, full of the feelings of Radha. Yeah, that is. Then another important meaning, he's born in the line of Madhu. Madhupati, Kunti Devi describes Krishna. It's Matir Madhupate Sakrit. He's the lord who appears in the dynasty of Madhu. Madhu was an ancestor of Krishna. So in that way, Madhava. Then another meaning. There's so many. The one above whom there is no one else. There's no master above him. I am sitting here. I may be the master of some people. Someone is socially above me, so I'm subordinate to them. And someone who's above me, then they're subordinate to someone else. And he goes on and on and on and up and up. And when we come to that person above whom there is no one else, that is God. That is Madhava. There's not an infinite upward regression. There's come to the buck stops here at Krishna's lotus feet. He is supreme. No, And no one is above him. It's not just we say Krishna, but you see, no one's above, no one's more powerful than Krishna. No one's more beautiful than Krishna. No one's more kind than Krishna. In all respects, Krishna is supreme. He controls. He is on top. Another meaning, Vaishakh month is called Madhava. That month is because Krishna imbues that season with its beauty and lushness and feeling of hope. Things coming into being. Madhava, the among the seasons, Madhava is very dear because Madhava, Krishna, is the spirit, literally, behind that season. Balade Vidyabhushan. Let's go back a little bit. The previous name, Lokanath. He's known as the Lord of the Devotees. And then Baladeva asked the question in his commentary, Namartha Sudha, his name of his commentary. Someone may say, well, others, Rudra, he's also called Lokeshvara, the Lord of the world. Why should we consider only Vishnu in that position? Or why particularly Vishnu? And then Baladev, he's seeing what Bhishma is thinking. The Bhishma says he is Madhava, who in his Bhagavad Gita refutes Dhunoti, their knowledge, the knowledge of people who don't know things properly. Dhunoti Ma, Madhava, as being mistaken. Maya Parita Jnana, Krishna refers to people who have knowledge, but their knowledge is covered by illusion. And how does that happen? By Madhava. For instance, people may think that Rudra and others are Lord of the world. Okay, but we should understand that they are Lords of the world. They can also, Rudra can also be called Lokeshvara, Vishwanath, Lokanath, but only because they take power from Vishnu. He gives them, they worship him. As stated in the Mahabharata, the Baladev Vidyabhushan quotes, Mahadeva sarvamedhe mahatma juvatma anang deva devo babhuva. After offering himself as oblation in a great universal sacrifice, and yagyo vai Vishnu, sacrifice means Vishnu, the magnanimous Lord Shiva became the Lord of the demigods. But Lord Vishnu is always the Supreme Lord. It's not that he does something or bows down to someone to get power. That power is inherent in him. Tamishvaranam paramam maheshvaram. Tam devatanam paramam chadaivatam. Pating patinam paramam parastat vidama devam bhuvanesham idyam. The Shvetashvatara Upanishad, which is often said to be in worship of, well, it states right there, it's worship of Rudra, but here we understand from the context that Rudra means Vishnu here. So, quoting from Shvetashvatara Upanishad, the verse I just quoted, may we know the great Lord, the supreme of all the lords, the supreme deity of the demigods, the supreme master above all masters, the supreme god, the worshipable master of the worlds. Now here's another meaning. Madhuvanna sambandhi madhava. Because he's related to Madhuvana. Madhuvana is a forest among the 12 forests of Vrindavan. Very important forest. Vrindavan is the 12 forests of Vrindavan, of which Vrindavan is the most famous and most important. Madhuvan, very important. The honey literally means the honey forest. Because of his relation with that, he is known as Madhava. Okay, now in this regard, I am taking the opportunity of speaking about Madhava, the husband of Goddess of Fortune, I'm going to reply to a question which was just sent to me 2 or 3 days ago as an email from someone who asked about, well, is there sex in the spiritual world? Does Krishna have sex? Does he have genitals? It may seem like a strange question. Srila Prabhupada was asked this same question toward the end of 1969 in a letter, and Srila Prabhupada replied at some length in a letter. He replied, I'll read his reply. Regarding your question, it is welcome. It is not outrageous. Madhusudan had written, well, maybe this question is outrageous, obviously. Prabhupada replied, any honest question is welcome. The spiritual master is meant for answering any honest question. Krishna has genitals, certainly. And he passes urine and stool also. It's stated in Bhagavata. Baby Krishna passes urine and stool. I guess he doesn't stop doing that when he gets older. Krishna's genitals, certainly. It is said that he has an eternal blissful body full of knowledge. So when he has got a body, he must have all the parts of a body. But we should not consider that his parts of the body are the same as ours. In the Brahma Sanghita, it is said that his parts of the body or limbs, each of them has got the potency of the others. For example, with our eyes we can see only, but we cannot eat. But Krishna's eyes can not only see, but also eat and beget children also. That's stated in Shastra. Simply by his glancing. Sa Aikshata, he saw. By his seeing, everything came into being. Lord Shiva is worshipped by millions of Hindus every day. How? Linga and Yoni. Linga means the genital of Lord Shiva, and Yoni means the genital, the female genital of Durga. The Hindus worship daily, and it's not that they're pretending that it's not. The very word is there, linga and yoni, penis and vagina. But that is sacred. They understand that Lord Shiva, aham bija pradapita, via the agency of Lord Shiva, Krishna injects all living beings into the universe. Through the sex, the combination of Shiva and Durga. So that is worshipable. When he does it, Lord Shiva does it, it is worshipable. It is not depraved or degraded. So Srila Prabhupada, referring to Krishna, he has got genitals necessarily. Necessarily, he does not require to use it for the same purpose as we do. There is another instance that Garbho Dakshayi Vishnu begot Lord Brahma from his abdomen, navel, and the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi, was nearby. She was just massaging the Lord's lotus feet. But he did not require the help of the goddess of fortune to beget Lord Brahma. That is his omnipotence. He is self-sufficient. He has got all the limbs for all the purposes, but he can use all of them for any purpose. This is inconceivable by us. We should not therefore compare our bodily function with Krishna's. His conjugal relationship with the gopis is not exactly in the same way as we have girlfriends. Neither the gopis made friendship exactly in the same fashion as here in the material world a girl makes friendship with a boy. They are different spheres of activities. Therefore, I sometimes warn my students not to discuss much about the affairs of Krishna's dealing with the gopis. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, such dealings are described in the 10th canto. And as it is already explained, 9 cantos have been devoted just to understand the philosophy of Krishna. In the 2nd canto, it is recommended that one should begin to see Krishna from the lotus feet, not from the genital. Gradually, as he advances in understanding Krishna, he should go up and up. In this way, one should try to see the face of Krishna, and his dealing with the gopis is compared to his sweet smile. So for the present, we should better stick our faith and observation to the lotus feet of Krishna and pray fervently that he may give us the strength and capacity to understand him as he is. Because as soon as we are able to understand him as he is, immediately we become liberated persons eligible for entering into the kingdom of God. This is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita 4th chapter, where the Lord says, simply by understanding my transcendental position, appearance, disappearance, and activities, one becomes eligible to enter into my abode just after giving up the present material body. So Krishna, Madhava means the husband of the goddess of fortune. The husband and wife, there is interaction and children are produced. We are the children, but it's not that the children, they know when they get a little older, they can understand that they are produced from the sex of their parents, but it's not something for them to discuss. The sex of the parent, that particularly means here in the material world, we got bodies via Shiva and Parvati, Shiva and Durga. Then what about Krishna? Well, there are descriptions of Krishna in the Rasa Shastra, of his enjoying with the gopis. We're not, as Srila Prabhupada says, we're enjoined something not to go very close to that. Don't think about it too much because the tendency to misunderstand is so strong. Krishna enjoys sexual relationships with the gopis and with his wives, but it is of a completely different quality. It's to what we think of as enjoyment in this world. It is sexual enjoyment. It's definitely sexual enjoyment. But it's just of such a different quality that we, who are enamored by the enjoyment of this world, we are sure to misunderstand it if we try to contemplate it in an immature state. Therefore, we advise not to. And even in the Rasa Shastras, you'll find there are so many things, everything is there, how Krishna seduces Radha, who pretends not to want to be seduced, and there's descriptions of kissing and so many things. But even in the Rasa Shastras, we don't find a description of a physical sexual act. Is it there or is it not? It's not discussed. It's as if glossed over. It's not for us as conditioned souls to even begin to think about, and even what to speak, even the highly liberated souls, they don't discuss. Maybe when you get very, 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 very close. Definitely not a matter for public discussion. There is in Vrindavan what is called the Grantha Samadhi, where it's said that the Jiva Goswami put away certain books. He put them in Samadhi, books written by Rupa and Sanatan. We don't know what's in those books. And even if you were to dig them up, probably by now, due to the time, that's all dissolved. Jiva Goswami thought it's better that's not in the world. People will misunderstand. What is there? We don't know. So everything comes from Krishna. He's not a eunuch. Understand that much. Do we have sex in the spiritual world? If we go to the spiritual world? This question, a few years ago, I was discussing with some God brothers. The question came up and someone brought out some statement, maybe Vishnu Tattva Nirnaya. So I believe it was something from Madhva Sampradaya about how there is just some statement, it was a clear statement, but not elaborating how there is in Vaikuntha, the husbands and wives, there is sexual activity also. Something came out like that. But again, sometimes Srila Prabhupada said, questions about the spiritual world, when you go there, you'll find out. Because if we think about it too much, we're certain to misunderstand. And then we won't go to Vaikuntha. If we say I'm going to have sex there, and then we think it's like sex in the material world, which is the cause of bondage in this material world, then we're more likely to end up in bondage and make offenses to Krishna and the residents of Vaikuntha. Enough said for now. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Vancha kalpa tarubhyas charkripa sindhubhya vajapatita nam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Dante nidhaya trunakang padayo nipatya kritvaja kakushata metata humbravimi. He sadhava sakala eva vihaya durad gauranga chandra charane kurutanuraga. Parivadatu jano yatatata va nanu mukharo na vayam vicharayamaha. Hari rasa madira madati matta bhuvi vilutama nartama nirvishama. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama.